Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNRadio.com/Behind the Badge.
Here's Nylander in the Oilers' zone. Sharp angle shot. He scores! Here's Seabrook, right circle. Fires. He scores! Oh, he's leveled by Andrew Shaw with a thunderous check. Here's a loose puck in front. They score! It's Saad. Shoots. He scores! The Cat connects with a one-timer.
It's time for another episode of Blackhawks Crazy, presented by FanList.
Keith will move it ahead to Shaw, to Doc over the Sabre line, down the left wing, and he scores! Kirby Doc! Here's Doc with the back, and he scores! Kirby Doc! The first two-goal night of Kirby Doc's career.
Chris Bowden and Joe Brand break down the latest storylines surrounding your favorite Chicago hockey team.
Each game I'm getting better and pushing myself to strive to be better.
That's hockey, baby!
Here's Chris Bowden and Joe Brand.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to a fresh edition of the Blackhawks Crazy Podcast presented by FanList. I'm your pre- and post-game host on WGN Radio, Chris Bowden, joined, as always, by Joe Brand, our strident, hardworking reporter for Blackhawks home games and host of WGN Sports here on Saturdays, sometimes Sundays as well, and the voice of the Kane County Cougars. And before we dive into what has been an 0-3 road trip, I'm going to let Joe take care of some business here first.
Well, strident. Wow, thank you. I'm going to have to look that word up. Yeah, Blackhawks Crazy Podcast is sponsored by FanList. FanList is the best platform for season ticket holders to sell their tickets. Are you a Blackhawks season ticket holder who sells multiple games? Get over to FanList.com/Blackhawks Crazy, spelled FanList.com. FanList partners with multiple ticket marketplaces and lists tickets for sales across marketplaces of all kinds, all at once. Sites like StubHub, Vivid Seats, SeatGeek, Game Time, and many more. And they do all the work. Multiple marketplaces will increase your ticket exposure, causing tickets to sell faster and for higher prices. Plus, FanList is free to use. Registration and listing tickets are free. When tickets sell, FanList charges the industry standard 15% of the final sale price. It's the same rate that all those major marketplaces charge. There are no hidden costs or added fees to use FanList. It's the best way for you as a season ticket holder to sell your tickets. Go to FanList.com/Blackhawks Crazy to receive a $20 bonus on your first sale. FanList.com/Blackhawks Crazy.
Nailed it. Joe did it again.
I read something. Thank you.
Yes. And I come in here groggy because after walking out of WGN Radio at 1 a.m. following the post-game show, I go to my place of sleep. And I have always been a person who is find it difficult to wind down after a work day. So finally got to sleep close to 4 o'clock in the morning. And the building that I'm in downtown, after a good 3 hours of sleep or so, decides the floor above us, which has been undergoing construction for quite some time, decides that there are some other stuff that they have to do. So all of a sudden at 7:15, 7:30 in the morning, I'm hearing various pounding and everything like that. All right, wake up, wait that out. About 8:45, it finally ceases. I close my eyes again, and the schedule was to start at 11 o'clock here at WGN Radio on Thursday morning. I wake up at 10:52, and you got my text, Joe. Ran into an issue.
You know what? I actually told the people above you to wake you up at the right time, but they just had the times mixed up. So that's where the miscommunication
So got. Once I show up, a discussion follows with various personnel here in the radio world about, boy, you look like you just got up. Yes, I did. And you should try different things to help you fall asleep after nights like that. But I'm like on enough medications for other things.
And not listening to construction on your way.
Anything else like that. That would help as well. So, about this Blackhawks road trip, how about the White Sox, huh?
Right, Joe? I was going to say, talk about not getting enough sleep or just not being where you would like to be right away.
Well, that's what the Blackhawks are right now on this road trip. And I remember on the pregame show on Sunday when this all started, I was talking with Troy. All right, what are you thinking? Maybe bare minimum you need 6 points to come out of here, you know, feeling decent. You're still right in the thick of the race. Well, it's an ofer. so far after the losses in Winnipeg, and then Edmonton on Tuesday, and then on Vancouver on Wednesday. Vancouver, they play their best game in a long time, and they get absolutely stoned by a guy who is in the zone, and Jacob Markstrom. Stick taps and hats off to him for a 49-save shutout. That's a Vancouver Canucks franchise record. And the Blackhawks did everything they possibly could, and on most nights, that's going to get you 2 points. Unfortunately, on Wednesday night, that was not the case, Joe.
No, absolutely not. I'm with you. That was one of, if not the best, consistent performance we've seen from the Blackhawks all year long. I mean, how many times have we talked about this team not playing consistently, not getting off to a good start, finding that surge a little bit too late? But that was not the case. I mean, what, the first 13 shots on goal to start the game?
Nothing.
All from the Hawks? I mean... The offense looked like it had its chemistry. The passing was good. But this is where you're at now with the Hawks in terms of you run into a good goaltender, which they have been the beneficiary of that so many times this year with Corey Crawford and Robin Lehner. So, okay, Jacob Markstrom's just on top of his game. But you have to go back to some of the injuries that the Blackhawks are dealing with. That impacts their depth, and that impacts what they can do when they're playing at their best, not being able to find a goal. That was the case last night. It just never happened. There were a few things that you look at and dissect a little bit differently. I thought Kirby Dach missed a huge opportunity to slide one past Markstrom, but he goes for the backhand instead. That's a learning moment. And Kirby Dach is more than qualified to have more than one of those a game. You just set the bar so high for him because of how talented he is. The first goal that got waved off, I think everyone's correct with it being a 50-50 call. Yes, probably making the argument for the Hawks, but if that goal goes in and waved in a good goal, I don't think it gets overturned when they go to review. It was just not their night, and it's a shame because they did so many things right.
There's some bigger issue things that we're going to discuss here based on this 0-3 start to the road trip. Let's first get some reaction from that game on Wednesday night, as the Blackhawks now have 2 days to sit on it before their road trip resumes Saturday in Calgary, and then a back-to-back, the bookend trip here. It begins in Winnipeg and ends in Winnipeg, both on Sundays. So off to this 0-3 start. Let's first hear from the captain, Jonathan Toews, after Wednesday night's 3-0 loss in Vancouver.
Getting her effort back to where it needs to be, and we'll go from there. So unfortunately we couldn't find ways to find the back of the net and open the game wide up a little bit, especially with the way we were playing and all four lines were engaged tonight.
Is it hard to feel good about a game when it's the fifth straight loss though?
Got no other choice. Sit around and sulk about it for 20 minutes, and then you gotta make a decision on how you want to react and get ready for the next one. So that's all we can do right now.
You just have to tip your hat sometimes. I mean, it wasn't just the shot total, but there was quality in there as well.
Yeah, I think so. Give their goaltender credit, and our D-men were good around the net, clearing second chances too. So maybe that's something we can do a little bit better, is getting numbers at the net. But we know the shot's coming, and find ways to get those ugly goals. That's why you got to score this time here.
How do you feel the younger guys are equipped to handle something like this at this stage of a season, losing streak? And you've been through things like this.
I think it's not easy, regardless of who you are and your experience level. And our leaders and our veterans have to take the wheel and do the right things, say the right things, and create that energy that we need in the locker room and on the bench. And then, everyone will follow suit from there.
You feel that this is still within reach, that you can overcome?
Absolutely. A lot of hockey left, so get the 2 points in the next game. That's all we can worry about right now.
You just kind of unplug tomorrow with the day off and just try not to think about things?
Yeah, a little bit mentally, maybe just get your rest. But it's playoff hockey right now, so we got to take care of ourselves, make sure we got that energy and get our legs going for the next one.
Jonathan Toews, again, Mr. Glass, half full, not necessarily half empty, but he was asked there in so many words whether hope remains, whether they are still in this race. And as we record here on Thursday afternoon, the Hawks remain at 58 points, more than a week since getting that point against the Boston Bruins at the United Center. There they stand once again, 58 points, 6 points behind Vegas, Arizona, Calgary, all sitting there at 64 in the Pacific in the first two positions of the wild card. And I guess what we're talking about here is, Are they out of it or not? No, I don't think they're out of it by any means. But, man, you got to get on your horse here real quick and make something out of these final two games of the road trip before coming home for two and then hitting the road once again. There's still a quarter of the season left after this road trip is over, and a lot of time to play hockey. But, you know, we've been kicking the can down the road for quite some time here this season. And facts are facts. They're sitting there at 0-3 after making some headway in winning 6 of 7, 12 out of 17, getting themselves back into the mix here. They've stepped back again. And I think that's, Joe, that's the most frustrating part, where you see some progress and you see some advancement in their game in terms of puck management, how to play the right way, and now it seemed to regress here over the course, really since they've come back from the bye week.
Yeah, exactly. This is a team that, on this road trip, has seen nothing despite adjustments being made and consistent play coming to fruition, which has been hammered so hard this year. Mathematically, are they still alive? Of course they are. Look at the standings right now. They have at least one game at hand against every team in front of them, except for Minnesota. So that's something you have to keep in mind. Clearly, we're grasping for straws here, but that's what works in the Blackhawks' favor. You're looking 58 points, six away from Arizona. They've got two games at hand compared to Arizona. Again, Minnesota, the only team with 56. Oh, I take that back. Nashville has 55 as well. That's what worries me the most, is how many teams they have to jump. If it's just 6 points away from Arizona, okay, you're talking about a whole different scenario. But now you've got Winnipeg, Minnesota, and Nashville in front. And I know fans get a little tired of the playoff conversation, acting as if us talking about it will make it happen. But the point is, what the Hawks do in these next few weeks before this trade deadline is going to determine how they approach the trade deadline, and it's going to determine how the future of this organization is the next coming years. So that's why these games mean so much. I mean, whether or not you're rooting for the playoffs, you think the playoffs are possible or not, these next few games are huge. And clearly the players want to obtain more players, more assets. So they want to win for that reason, to create a stronger playoff push. And you're seeing that effort come from the players in these last few games, but just not getting the benefit of any points is what's troublesome.
And the real killer is that you are going up now against the teams that you need to leap over, and they are not getting the job done here. On this entire road trip, you know, they're finished with Calgary after Saturday night. They're finished with Winnipeg after Sunday night. They are now done with Vancouver. They have one more game against Edmonton a little bit later on when they come back and play them in March, I believe. But these are the missed opportunities on this road trip, where they're not taking advantage of these situations where they're the ones being shut out when they should be the ones shutting out the teams that they're playing. And I'm not speaking in literal terms of shutting them out, but getting 2 points and not allowing the opponents to get any points at all. And now the ladder gets a little taller, so to speak, where they're missing these opportunities against these teams that they should be beating, they need to beat, and they're not taking care of business there.
Well, and this is where the struggles in the beginning of the year come into play, because if they're playing consistent or even .500 hockey back in the opening months, it doesn't look as bleak as it does right now, because now you're seeing a team figuring out their system with the coach of Jeremy Colliton, and you're seeing consistent play, and it's coming up a little bit too late because of how deep of a hole they dug themselves into back in October and November.
After we hear from Jeremy Colliton, we're going to advance our discussion here in terms of what this means now for Stan Bowman's mindset. And, when we were last recording our podcast after the game against Boston last Wednesday night at the United Center, it was still, okay, let's see what happens in this five-game sequence, and that will kind of shape what we think Stan Bowman will be doing come the trade deadline a week from Monday. And now, how this 0-3 start may affect that in particular. Again, the Blackhawks played extremely well on Wednesday night in Vancouver, But moral victories isn't something what they need. Jeremy Colleton still holds on to if they continue to play the way that they did on Wednesday night, as elusive as it is and as inconsistent as it has been, that they will get their share of points. But it's getting awfully late here, and I'm not talking about the 9:30 puck drop in Vancouver on Wednesday night. We're talking about late in the season.
9:30? Try 9:45,
yeah,
right?
By the time the two anthems were done and everything like that. We were really stretching out. But here's head coach Jeremy Colleton after that 3-0 loss in Vancouver.
Tough to go in there after that kind of effort and another loss, but ultimately the only way we're going to get wins is by playing to a similar level, and kind of reinforces the lost opportunity of the last couple games where we weren't at that level, and now all of a sudden we play well and we don't get the win, and we're on a little bit of a slide. But for us, we got to have another game next time out that's we play just as hard, and I thought pretty committed to the details of the game, and obviously we had a lot of opportunities that didn't go in, but we just got to stick with it.
How were you able to control the play and the shots on goal so dominantly?
Well, I think we had a lot of guys going up and down the lineup. I thought we were skating really well. We won a lot of 50-50s. We're pretty clean with a puck. We had a shooter's mentality. We're going to the net. Their goaltender was outstanding. And sometimes it's like that. But again, if we can find a way to string together a bunch of performances like that, then there's lots of points left. We can get them.
Is that a skate cut on Zach Smith's hand?
Yeah.
Is he going to be all right?
I think he's going to be out for a little bit anyway. I'm not sure, exactly timeline, but I'd be surprised if he played next game.
Did you have to go to the hospital or anything like that?
No. Not that I know of. I saw him after the game. He seemed fine, yeah.
Get an explanation that satisfied you on the challenge?
We felt like in the moment that Saad didn't prevent him from making a save, and felt like we had a decent chance of getting a goal. We feel pretty good about our penalty kill, so it was worth taking a shot. Obviously, it didn't work out, but that's the way it is.
Seems like it's more upbeat in the room than maybe a normal team after a 5-game losing streak. What is leading to that?
Well, I think there's a belief in our team. I think the guys in there believe we're good enough to put a run together. Well, obviously, we need starts with one. But today was a step forward in our performance, and if we can continue that, and there's no reason why we can't, then we'll get our wins.
Power play was 0-for-5, but a few of them were really generating and getting chances. How do you feel that's progressing?
Yeah, it was. We had our moments. It still felt difficulty getting set up on a couple of them, and so you think maybe we left something on the table there, but we certainly had some opportunities and just got to find a way to put them in.
That's Jeremy Colleton after the Hawks fall 0-3 on this road trip with two stops to go. Not the situation that they want to be in right now. And we mentioned before hearing from Jeremy there about what Stan Bowman's mindset may be here. I'm not sure if he is going to be inclined to trade one of the goaltenders unless his socks are knocked off. Obviously, if the opportunity presents itself and he doesn't think that there's going to be any chance of making the playoffs, say this trip ends in total disaster and you end up 0-5, and say you only split the couple of games at home coming up against the Rangers in Nashville. I might see that happening, be a more likelihood of seeing that happening. I don't know what the market would be for, say, an Eric Gustafson or some of the other older veterans, be it a Zach Smith, provided he's healthy, or anyone else like that. But I think this is all dependent on the return. I'm not sure if Stan is necessarily inclined to give anyone away, whether a fourth or fifth round draft pick is anything that may entice him, or he just rolls the dice with what the roster that he has, and you cross your fingers and eyes and toes and hope for a hot streak here down the stretch. Not looking good after the 0-3 start to this trip, and we'll forego the slap shots questions this week, but mathematically, the math is not looking good at all this season, especially as we mentioned before, you're going up head-to-head against these teams for the final time. You're not taking care of business, and these are the times where you need most to put those points in your back pocket, and the Hawks are just swinging and missing no matter the degree to which they're playing. They could have been better in Winnipeg the final two periods. They definitely could have been better in Edmonton. I don't know how much better they could have been in Vancouver, but the hockey gods in that particular case not smiling down on them at all.
No, and this is what we've been talking about a lot today, but again, the adjustments have been made. This team is improving, but just not seeing it on the winning end. You're not going to get morale victories. I thought their third period against Edmonton was what they needed. They needed that aggressive approach. They needed to constantly hammer the net. They did that. That bled over into the Vancouver game, and nothing was showing from it. Again, mathematically, yes, they're alive. If I'm Stan Bowman today, I am kicking the tires on everybody possible. I think I think it would be worth it to see what you get for Robin Leonard and or Corey Crawford. Why not maybe dangle both out there and hand over to a team that's contending for a cup and they think that that's that last motivating factor that can get them that cup? Corey Crawford clearly has his ties with Chicago, being here so long and winning two cups. I don't think it's that... I don't know what Corey Crawford is thinking, but can't you still be enticed to come back to Chicago, even if you're dealt for finding some value of an expiring contract? And the Robin Leonard situation, too, maybe the same case. He's loved his time here. He loves the city. At least that's what he says. He wants to win. He's helping out the team. And I'm not saying, and I don't think the Hawks would try to convince him to take a pay cut. We already went down that road a few months ago, but I just see situations where when you move Robin Leonard and or Corey Crawford, you can still maybe get them back next year is what I'm saying. So if that's possible, why not try to dangle out both?
Well, that's a heavy roll of the dice, though, counting on that to happen, you know, and whether you want to, if you end up losing both of them, whether you want to hang your hat on Colin Dealey and Kevin Lankinen, who are down in Rockford right now. I would say Stan checks the market on both of them, only perhaps if he's going, I think the most extreme he gets is dealing only one of them in order to keep the other here. I would imagine that the preference would be to convince Robin Leonard to be that guy to remain here. But beyond that, yeah, I don't know how marketable some of the other guys are who would you would think might you know bring you a decent return. And then the other problem you have here, the other concern you have, I don't think Alex DeBrincat's season is a long-term problem. I think this will be more of an aberration or not. But really the one that I'm starting to perhaps scratch my head about a little bit, and I don't want to do this, but based on his play this season and based on his history from what he was going through in Arizona, when Dylan Strome came here last year, he was a real good player, and it gave you reason for hope of yeah, you got another young player you can build around. I still think that's there in them. I think he's just going through a crisis of confidence right now. But to end up being a healthy scratch a couple of games ago and not see perhaps the response that you wanted, whether this is because he's being moved to wing, an unfamiliar position to him. I don't know how much going back to center would necessarily help his game. Probably to a certain degree, but again, of those two guys who were so productive as teammates back in junior play, with what we've seen here from Dylan Strome here this season, especially here, I'm not talking early on, but especially here in the most recent stretch prior to his injury and now coming off of it, I think there may be a little concern, and what he may be doing is giving the Hawks a break in his contract talks, too, in terms of what they may have to pay him to keep him around, too.
That's an interesting point. I didn't think about that. I definitely think that the injuries that Dylan Strome has been dealing with this year have played a role in maybe his lack of consistency.
Yeah, concussion, high ankle sprain.
Yeah, and again, with this team having so many offensive struggles, that can be contagious. And especially with his line mate and best friend of Alex DeBrincat. Now, Alex DeBrincat has said, Jeremy Colliton has said, Dylan Strome has said, just because the goals aren't there doesn't mean that Alex DeBrincat isn't making a difference offensively. He's still creating chances. He's still doing the things that he typically would do. But clearly, there's something missing this season. I do agree with you that I see this way more temporary than long-term for Alex DeBrincat. Now, is it more temporary than Dylan Strome? I don't know, because he has had those demons in the past with Arizona. Now that you mention it, Mark Lazarus had a great piece in The Athletic about playing with confidence and losing it and how to gain it back. And
The greatest players in the world
right.
are suddenly scratching their heads, and it feels like the weight of the world is upon them.
And the coolest or the most interesting part I found in that was Dylan Strome, when he came to Chicago, they told him to get an apartment. Get an apartment in the city. You're going to be here. And that was such a confidence boost for him. It's a big reason why he was an impact right away. But that's an interesting point, and something to look forward down or look at towards the line, down the line, that is. Whose is more temporary, Alex DeBrincat or Dylan Stroms?
All right, so let's say the Hawks come up empty on this road trip. And we started this podcast talking about Troy and I discussing you want 6 points out of it. What if you come away with zero? I mean, does that put the stamp now on the season?
I think it should. I think a lot.
We don't want to think about it that way by any means.
No, of course
especially
not.
As you're pre- and post-game host and friendly reporter inside the Blackhawks locker room having to talk to players after games.
Well, and you bring up another point. I thought Jonathan Toews and Connor Murphy's approach yesterday in the dressing room was, I mean, I wasn't there, but I watched it and listened to it. They're upbeat because, like Toews said, what else can we do? We played our best game, arguably, all year long, and we didn't come away with 2 points. We can't just sulk about it. We got to move on. Of course these are must-win games. Of course the players know that. But when you give your full-on effort and you shoot 50 times at the goalie, but he comes up with fantastic saves, yes, what else are you to do? I think just hit the sale button right now. I think a lot of Blackhawks fans are thinking that too. Clearly that's not going to be the case until further down the line. I mean, Stan Bowman, and you ask anybody in the front office, they still think this is a playoff caliber team. Maybe it is, but again, they dug themselves such a hole, such of a deep hole earlier in the year. Now you find the problem of digging yourself out of it, even when you're playing some solid hockey.
The bottom line is, as we record here on February 13th, 11 days clear of this trade deadline, they have not proven that they are a playoff team based on results. And that's the bottom line as far as all of that is concerned. And again, we'll have more discussion on this as we go along. And when we record our next podcast, I think it will be even further shaped as to which direction Stan Bowman is going. So, by the way, Jacob Markstrom, a free agent as well. I don't think Vancouver, in the position that they are in, especially after that performance, is looking to deal him at the trade deadline. But they do have an interesting decision to make here. They got a couple of guys in their system, including the backup right now, Thatcher Demko, who looks to be a pretty decent goaltender. Markstrom is 30 years old, but with that performance that he had on Wednesday night, it's almost like you almost feel inclined. You have to pay the man, and he was absolutely dynamite last night. So he is another one of those goalies who could be on the market, along with the Corey Crawfords of the world, the Robin Leonards, and a couple of others who may not be having as good a season as those three in particular. But if none of them are signed or moved, it creates quite an interesting market for goaltenders in the offseason. So, Joe, 1980, where were you?
We did the math earlier. I was negative 11.
Negative 11. Well, back in 1980, I was, 17 years old at the time that some political tensions were going on in this world between the United States and Russia, among other countries as well. And the politics became a platform that kind of crept into sports in those 1980 Winter Olympics in the burgeoning burg of Lake Placid, New York. And I remember vaguely, as I was in the midst of trying to be a good student in high school and try and
what do you mean trying to be?
Raise prospects for my basketball career, which never ended up happening. The 1980 Olympics happened in Lake Placid, New York, and it was an incredible experience for the U.S. Olympic hockey team. And a number of those players would go on to have good to great NHL careers. But it was really a storybook situation with the way the United States team, made up largely amateurs and college kids, not like we've seen more recently where NHL players were allowed to play in the Olympics. And, you wonder if that situation is ever going to happen again. I think the players want to do that. It's an issue that remains to be seen from scheduling and the players' union and the commissioner and the league, all the teams as well. But guys like Jack O'Callaghan, who eventually became a member of the Blackhawks, he was already a draft pick of the Blackhawks. Went to Boston University, was an excellent player there, one of the best players in the entire country. He was a part of that 1980 U.S. Olympic hockey team that just got crushed in a couple of Olympic games by that Russian team, which basically at that time was made up of professionals, the greatest players in the world. And there have been a couple documentaries that we've seen about what they were put through, basically a member of the nation's army, but then specialized into their hockey careers. And it was a full-time job for those guys in particular. So basically, it was a bunch of college kids and amateurs going up against a professional team of the highest caliber players in the Soviet Union at the time. There was a bit of a Cold War going on, and nevertheless, those countries played along with everyone else in Lake Placid, New York. And when it came down to the semifinals, it was a U.S. team that lost 10-3 or 10-4, I think 2 weeks before the Olympic tournament in an exhibition against that Russian team. And they came up with the miracle. And you've heard the great call from Al Michaels at the time. You've seen a couple of documentaries and movies that were made as well. But Jack O'Callaghan was front and center in that team, even though he wasn't able to play in the entire tournament due to an injury. But he was able to return right before that semifinal matchup with the Soviet Union, in which all odds were stacked against them. And I had a chance to visit with Jack O'Callaghan, who's good for him. Lived in Chicago here for a while, was part of running a financial services company too, and is now down in Florida full-time playing golf rather than fighting through the snow that we're finding here on Wednesday and Thursday in Chicago. And I had a chance to catch up with him. If you didn't hear it on the post-game show on Sunday night following the loss to Winnipeg, here's our visit with Jack O'Callaghan, taking us through some of the bullet points of that 1980 team and a little bit of memories from his time with the Blackhawks and his old teammate Troy Murray too. We began our discussion when I asked Jack whether he can even wrap his mind around the fact that it has been four decades since that miraculous game in Lake Placid.
Yeah, it flew by, right? So 40 years. I mean, I was 22 now, I'm 62, and it's, you know, it happens, right? The clock keeps ticking. And it's been a nice 40 years, though, when it comes to the Olympic part of it. I mean, fortunately, I'm still healthy and active and all that stuff, and I'm still working and gainfully employed and everything. And but I've had, you know, 40 years of a tailwind of fun conversations with people from all over the place, and that's been a very enjoyable part of it for me.
Is that game against Russia, has it blurred over the years, or is it still very clear in your mind, or are there specific moments that remain clear in your mind? And obviously, everyone talks about this game with the knowledge that you still had to beat Finland in one more game to capture the gold, but everyone talks about that one game. How clear is it still 40 years later?
Well, you know, 40 years later, Chris, nothing's really that clear, right? But, you know, it is memorable parts of it, right? We know we played them. We know we won. You know, seeing 10 minutes on the clock when Mike Arizioni scored in the third period with exactly 10 minutes on the clock is something that really stands out. Some of the interactions we had in the locker room, some of the interactions we had, you know, on the bench in those last 10 minutes, and just sort of Herbie, you know, maintaining his calm as a coach and us maintaining our focus and really being committed to playing a good, solid defensive game. We had played them a couple of weeks prior in New York City, and we played them more of an open, we try to play them in a more of an open skating, kind of wide open style, and that was not a smart move against the Russians. Mm-hmm. So they beat us 10-3, but we had a different mindset in the game that counted in Lake Placid on that Friday night in the semifinals. And so, you know, it was really it was just a step by step, kind of maintain our game plan, keep the game close. You know, don't let them get two or three ahead of us. We were able to do that. You know, we were down 1-0, tied it at 1. We were down 2-1, tied it at 2 at the end of the first. They came at us with a pretty good barrage in the second period after they had pulled Trajan and put Michigan in, and we withstood that barrage. So we were in the locker room at the end of the second period, only down 1 against the Russians, and we thought that that's where we needed to be. We had talked about it. We needed to be either tied or down 1 going into the third period. You know, we couldn't be down 2 or 3 or 4, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of, you know, it was following the script that we had sort of in our minds. We knew we needed to do. We knew we needed to be close going into the third. So, you know, we were there. And then in the third period, we just went out with a lot of emotion, and we were a good hockey team with a lot of good players, and we were very fit, and you know, we got good goaltending, and, you know, the rest is history, right? We tied it up early and then tied it up with about 11 minutes left, and then Mike scored with 10 minutes left, and then we just kind of, you know, we didn't just hang on. I mean, the one thing we did do in that last 10 minutes, we didn't just back in. We did play aggressively. We had a couple of breakaways in that last 10 minutes. I mean, we could have beaten them by 2 or 3.
Mm.
And we shut them down pretty good. So those are some memories I have, and obviously the aftermath of the game was pretty exciting.
And the way you approach that, the finish to that game, probably, you know, could be good advice for some of these teams who tend to go into a shell when they have that kind of lead, you know, even to this day. Now, you guys were down 1-0, and one thing that a lot of people keep coming back on is a hit that you delivered to a Soviet player that, you know, may have been a little bit of a wake-up call. What do you remember about that hit and how it set up the tying goal?
I don't have really. That's just the way I played.
So yeah.
For me, kind of finishing my check was just how I always play the game. And you know, again, in 1980, I was, it's not like I liked Russians, you know, so any chance you had back then to take a run at a Russian, I mean, you took it and you put a little extra juice in it to make sure. So maybe that, was a worthwhile, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I've seen it in the movie and I've seen highlights of it. So yeah, I know what happened, but, yeah, like I said, it's just something I did normally. I would do that in my sleep.
Yeah, that photograph has faded a little bit in the memory bank. Now, tell us a little bit about how much in danger, how much fear did you have that you wouldn't be able to play through this tournament? Because I know you had that knee injury early on or right before, and you know, how much did you have to push it in order to?
Well, I hurt myself in the game against the Soviets down in New York City. So I tore my ligaments in my left leg and took a really bad hit, you know, because, again, I'm a competitive lunatic, and we were probably losing, you know, 6-1. And here I am trying to make it 6-2, charging up ice. And one of these, you know, Russian defensemen came across with a hip check, and he almost knocked my leg off. So it carried me off the ice, and it didn't look good. I mean, I called my parents and told them I wasn't going to be on the team. And there was one doctor, this guy, Richard Stedman, who's one of the most famous orthopedic surgeons in the United States. And he was the one doctor that actually believed that I could recover enough in two days to stay on the roster. So Herbie gave me 2 days to see what I could do with some rehab and recovery, a pretty aggressive program for 2 days. I mean, you know, exercise as hard as I could for an hour and then rest for an hour and a half, 2 hours, and go back at it for another hour. I mean, I did that nonstop for 2 days. So I was sleeping, you know, in 1 hour increments, waking up, working out again. I had a great trainer, this guy, Bruce Cole. So, I mean, the end of the day is before they put the roster in, Stedman pulled these other doctors in, and they all looked at my leg, and they all couldn't believe how much I had recovered. So I still missed 2 games. You know, Herbie kept me on the team, and he knew I wasn't going to play as much as I normally had. I mean, I played all the time. You know, defenseman-wise, I mean, I was the leading scoring defenseman on the team. I led the league team in penalty minutes, and I played all the time. And then all of a sudden, I wasn't playing as much. So in retrospect, you know, it's probably a good thing that I hurt my knee, because who knows how I might have screwed that whole thing up had I been playing the normal shift. By the time I came to Chicago afterwards, I mean, I missed the first two. I played the next 5 games. You know, the movie had me coming back in dramatic fashion, playing against the Russians. But I had actually played, you know, I only missed the Swede and Czech game, but I played the next 5. But when I came to Chicago and Dr. Kolb looked at me, you know, he just didn't think I could play. And he's probably right. I probably shouldn't have been playing. I was taped from my toe to my hip in a squat position. So it was probably kind of unrealistic. But again, I'm a hockey player. So, I, you know, if I could get a skate on, I was going to go play.
Now, you overlapped a little bit with Arruzioni over at BU, correct?
So, Mike, when I went in, I was a freshman at BU, and Mike was a junior.
Okay.
And then, a sophomore year, Mike was the captain. And then my junior year, I was a captain of the team. We won the NCAA championships, and Mike had gone and played in minor pro, like not the American League, like the Wolves level, but the next level down. Back then it was called the International League. And Mike was playing in Toledo, and he had two great seasons, but he wasn't going anywhere from there, and he knew it. So he was going to try out for the Olympic team. And
He always says he was surprised that he was named captain.
Well, he was surprised he even made the team. I mean, that league was a non-professional league, so he was able to qualified for an Olympic tryout. He made the team. And, the thing about Mike is, he was a little older, right? So I was 22. Billy Baker, the guys that graduated in 79, we were 22. Mike was 25, probably. And, he's a little older. He had been a captain. I mean, look, every guy in that team had been a captain of his team. So it wasn't like Mike, they put the C on Mike, and then it was like all of a sudden nobody had anything to say. Mm-hmm. We were a team full of leaders and competitors and excellent college players, it was a team full of captains. But Mike definitely, he was a good guy, bridged the gap from the Eastern guys, the Western guys, and he was a good face of the team. And then, of course, he scores the big goal, so, he wasn't painting bridges anymore, I'll tell you that much.
Very good. what kind of similarities and differences were there between Jack Parker and Herb?
It was just a different time, I guess. I don't know. We played 60 games or 65 games over the course of our preseason. We had to train to play in against international, tremendously talented teams. So Parker was very emotional, and very rigid. A, B, C, D, tic-tac-toe, like our power play. Everybody knew what it was, but he's like, if we execute it, doesn't matter if they know. So he was very rigid that way. Herbie was more of a tactical guy as far as attack, the way they taught the game. He was taught us more of a free-flowing style, which was a little weird for me to learn. Hmm. But most importantly, what we did on that Olympic team, aside from the development of the hockey player, was the physical off-ice training that we did. We were so fit. I learned so much about training off-ice, which is what no one did back in the late 70s, even in the NHL or anywhere. I mean, I never lifted weights, or I used to run. But with Herbie, we trained a lot off the ice. So that was a big difference between the two of them. They were both great coaches. But, I was ready for her by the time I got there, and I was ready to play a little more, free-flowing type of game and develop my athletic ability on top of it. So they were both great guys. I mean, without either one of them, had I not had both of them, I don't think I ever would have been able to play as a pro. I mean, I just improved so much with Jack at BU, and then with Herbie, I just kind of ramped it up to another level. So,
speaking of the pros, what can you remember most, or what do you value most about your time with the Blackhawks? How much time do you spend watching them? And most importantly for me, what was Troy Murray like as a teammate?
Yeah, Troy. Well, Troy's pretty good. Like we came in right around the same time. He's a little younger than me. I had spent a couple of years in the minors, but we went down there to Moncton and we won a Calder Cup one year. So the next year I came up with Steve Larmer, and of course I'm a little older than those guys, but Larmer and Dave Feimster and Steve Ludzik, and then Troy kind of came to the team right around then, or maybe the year before, but he was coming out of North Dakota, and he was like another one of those guys. He would have been a great guy on an Olympic team because he was just a talented, hard-charging, competitive guy. He was a leader, very talented, but obviously he refused to lose, man. He was my kind of player all day long, and one of the great memories of him as a teammate, and he's one of those guys don't go to bat for you, and you do anything to go to bat for him. He's just that kind of guy. So you're never going to get me to throw him under the bus. I'll tell you that, Chris.
That wasn't the intention. That wasn't the intention. As we wrap up here, I you're probably keeping fairly close tabs on the Hawks, kind of a similar situation as a year ago. But I know probably your biggest priority right now with what's in front of you is the Beanpot tomorrow night.
BU won. I was there last week when they double overtime game against BC, which is pretty cool. And then they got beat 4-1 by Merrimack the other night, so that wasn't so great. So maybe they'll get their act together tomorrow night. But I had a great time playing with the Hawks and living in Chicago and being part of the alumni. And I'm still a Blackhawk at heart. And it was so much fun to watch them through the years. And when Dale was the GM and he was building that team, and then watch them all come together with Patrick and Jonathan and Dunks and Seabrook and all these guys. And, Yeah, it's just been great, and I'm really excited for them now. It seems like they're pulling their stuff together again, and so yeah, I got high hopes for all to the finish here. I really hope they finish strong and get a chance to compete again in the playoffs.
Jack, thanks so much for the visit. We appreciate your time, and keep hitting them straight out there. Okay.
Yeah. Fun down here in Florida, man.
I'll bet.
Escaped from Chicago.
We're all jealous.
I'll see you guys later.
All right. Thanks, Jack.
Take care.
So Jack was not going to throw our partner Troy Murray under the bus. I don't think anybody should particularly do that either, especially me, since I got to sit next to him.
He throws a lot of people under the bus, though. Someone's got to give him his payback every once in a while.
Yeah. So great catching up with Jack O'Callaghan, catching all those memories. And we'll let Joe catch up on reading up in history books about that.
I was going to say, that lead-in, I feel like it was Chris Bowden saying, all right, gather around, kids, around the fireplace. Let me tell you about a little miracle that happened.
Your old, crusty pre- and post-game host, Chris Bowden. I remember back in the day, back in 1980, before Joe was even a glint in his parents' eyes back in the day. But always a great visit with Jack O'Callaghan, still a part of the Blackhawks family and community as well. And speaking of community, let's circle back to, I think from what all intents and purposes, I only heard it from what Troy and John said, the pregame ceremony, even though Blackhawks fans do not want to hear about the Sedin twins. Dave Boland was not a part of the salute and the retirement ceremony.
He couldn't make it. He wasn't invited.
Duncan Keith was there, but he decided not to show up on the ice for that ceremony. But I thought it was interesting, especially for all the pomp and circumstance that they brought back and all those lovely names that Blackhawk fans adore so much, from your Alex Burrows to your Kevin Bieksa, to your Ryan Kesslers. They were part of that ceremony, and Roberto Luongo as well. They stretched that thing out, gave the Sedin twins their due. And let's face it, they were great players for the Vancouver Canucks back in the day. And they stretched that ceremony out, but I thought they did it the right way, and they told everybody to come in early, and they did what ended up being, I think, about a half hour or so, maybe more than that, before the teams came out for warm-ups a half hour or so before the game started. And, I think Vancouver's the type of hockey market where, and with the caliber of players that the Sedin twins were, that they were able to get it done in a pregame ceremony. I don't know how many of the Canucks players were out there necessarily watching. I didn't get a grasp of that. But the timeline wasn't broken for when they would normally drop a puck for a game in Vancouver, but since all the ceremony was played out before that. But I don't know if that affected the Vancouver Canucks at all. I'd like to think it was more the Blackhawks being assertive, but it was a bit of a sluggish start, and in the end, it doesn't end up helping the Blackhawks either in losing 3-0.
You're right. Well, clearly just want to go back a little bit with the Sedin mention. Yes, they were so despised by Blackhawks fans because they were so good, which made for such a great rivalry. And that's the Vancouver Canucks chapter is so pivotal in the Blackhawks dynasty run. So it was kind of cool going back, reliving all those memories. NBC Sports Chicago had a great highlight collage package, whatever. I still love Dustin Byfuglien scoring, I think, his hat trick goal, and he's got his arms extended as he's gliding along the corner of the ice. One of the fans is hitting the glass. It's just so fantastic. I wanted to talk about these pregame ceremonies. Eddie Olczyk talked about it before the game, or rather during the game, saying his idea is to have the ceremony the day before. You can sell tickets, you can open up the place, sell concessions, and then that way it doesn't impact, number one, the start time of the game the next day, and number two, how it might impact the teams. And I do like that idea. I feel like that might be a little complicated, whatever. But why can't we just do this a little bit earlier? Why can't we do it at 6:00, let's say? You open the gates up maybe an hour earlier than you normally would. You get a little bit more money with concessions. Fans are going to come, especially on the Hawks side. And then just have the players mosey on in. If they want to come, then they're there already. It doesn't impact their timeline of getting ready. This would be around the time when they're like stretching in the hallways or something like that. Just make sure they're wearing some quarter zips and hanging out by the bench. I just feel like it could be such a cool moment, such a cool event. And then hey, you just fans wait around for another extra half hour before the game to start, and then it doesn't impact the start of the game. And that's the thing, everyone was talking about before how these ceremonies, if they bleed into the start time of the game, they actually benefit the visiting team because you're just a little bit more ready to go. Mm-hmm. You're not as focused on the ceremony as the home team. Like you said, Blackhawks got off to a great start. It didn't end up working out. I wanted to go back and look at the record for the Hawks on these pregame ceremonies. Clearly, the most recent one was Patrick Kane's 1,000th point. That was the Joel Quenneville game. So a lot of emotions rolling in there, but the Blackhawks didn't win. Again, one game. I know that's the smallest sample size there is. But I think it's interesting. You know, why not? Hey, make a little bit more money from it and entertain both sides without impacting the start of the game.
Well, unlike Miracle on Ice, you were old enough to remember those three consecutive seasons which the Blackhawks and the Canucks faced off in the playoffs. And those were seminal moments for this franchise. And you talk about rivalries. You know, you have Bears Packers, you have Cubs Cardinals, and this is a smaller sample size with rivalries. I mean, it was Blackhawks Canucks back in 1983 when I can go back to my earlier days of covering. But I was fortunate enough to be around and cover those series where this is when it clicked and kicked in for the Blackhawks. Those great series against the Canucks, the 09. The Blackhawks fell a little bit short. They couldn't get over the hump in the following series against Detroit, but that's when things really started getting nasty between the Blackhawks and the Canucks in that 09 series. Patrick Kane has the hat trick in the clincher here at the United Center. Roberto Luongo is crying in the locker room afterwards because he knows as one of the leaders of that team, he has to go back to Vancouver and that team that had so many expectations let his city down. And then in 2010, when I got a chance to travel with the team as well in that second round series against the Canucks, just being able to experience the highs and the lows of, okay, the Blackhawks are up 3-1. They're back home for game five. They're going to clinch it here, and then they lose. And then they have to go back to Vancouver for game six, and they clinch it there. And the kind of momentum that and belief that had built both in the city and the team itself in terms of being able to advance itself and have confidence in itself and win a Stanley Cup. And then the following season in 2011 in the first round when the Blackhawks barely got into the playoffs, and it was Vancouver that held the expectations. Hawks are down 3-0. They rally to tie the series at 3, only to lose in overtime on the Burrows goal in Game 7 in Vancouver. That's what makes sports great, is when you find that one team where, you know, you are dropping the gloves and putting up your dukes and going head-to-head with in consecutive seasons. That was really a thrill ride in terms of the Blackhawks building up the power of this organization back in the day.
The fact that it's a rivalry drawn up, that's not your traditional rivalry. I mean, right. You bring up the fights and the battles they had in the 80s, but still, it was nothing.
Two franchises and organizations and groups of players that wanted the same thing.
Yeah, and had mutual respect for each other. I mean,
well, I don't know about that.
Well, maybe mutual now. Hate. Maybe now. Yeah, right. Maybe now, but back then, oh, man.
Did you say you thought you saw Taves wearing a Sidney McCallum?
Yes, I'm almost we got to go to Paul Lucas on Twitter. He's the guy that brings up all those uniform blemishes or things like that. But yes, I saw a 22-33 on the back of Taves' helmet. I want to say all the Hawks wore it. I thought that was very odd.
Yeah.
I think clearly there's nothing wrong with the home team doing that, but for the visiting team, and especially the Blackhawks, I don't know if they, I'm sure they planned this to be against the Hawks so that they could.
Oh, yeah, they did.
Yeah, so, but I don't know. I just found that very weird. But I'm a guy that found it weird. I think a lot of other people did too, but Derek Jeter's retirement year, how they had a number 2 stitched on all of the Yankees caps, and the guy's still on the team. It's right. Like, come on. But yeah, I found it very odd that they made the Blackhawks wear an ode to the Sedins on their uniforms.
Yes, unusual to say the least, especially knowing the history of that rivalry and some of the players who are still out on the ice involved in that. Thanks for listening to this edition of the Blackhawks Crazy Podcast presented by FanList. We're going to come your way again on Thursday morning of next week, following up after the Wednesday game against the New York Rangers. By this time, the Hawks definitely need to have themselves a three-game winning streak at this point, or else the tone of our podcast is going to be quite different.
We're going to have to start getting very creative. No. Talk about.
We don't want to do that.
No, we don't. But
especially
we might.
With guys who oversleep and you know, dragging
the creative
themselves
juices
out of
take a little bit longer to right. get flowing.
Exactly.
In that case.
So let's certainly hope that the Blackhawks, this 3-0 loss to Vancouver, as the guys and head coach Jeremy Colliton were saying afterwards, is a positive and a springboard to better things. So it's Calgary on Saturday, Winnipeg on Sunday, then back home for games against the Rangers on Wednesday, and then the Nashville Predators on Friday. We will again come to you Thursday morning after that game against the New York Rangers. Thanks to everyone for helping out. Thanks to you for listening. Thanks to Curtis Koch, our producer, for putting it all together. Thanks to Ernie Skatton as well. Again, we encourage you to subscribe and listen to the Blackhawks Crazy Podcast presented by FanList on iTunes and Apple Podcasts. We also tweet out a link, as always, to our fresh editions, both on our Twitter accounts. I'm at @BowdenTweets. Joe's at @Joe_Brand1, and we will also have it tweeted out or the link sent out on WGNRadio.com. Again, Blackhawks needing very much so a couple of wins here to finish out this road trip as they fall 6 points behind in the wild card as we taper on Thursday afternoon. Again, thanks for listening, everyone. We'll talk to you again next Thursday morning.
How about that?
They won it. The Hawks win the Stanley Cup.
Thanks for listening to the Blackhawks Crazy Podcast. Tell a friend, subscribe, and join the conversation. And follow the guys on Twitter @BowdenTweets and @Joe_Brand1.
That was great.